approaching Armageddon.
When Bob and I started thinking about this, and we first got together, and we put all the information together, we were like the two pessimists. And so when we first met, we got together, instead of shaking hands, we just shook our heads. So we revised this somewhat. We're going to talk to you a little bit. We're going to talk to each other mostly. But what we want to do is kind of focus on Armageddon. What are some of the real trends that are coming our way that indicate where we go, where we are, our perspective on God's plan, the trends and events that happen? You'll see some of the major things on the screen behind us. And the goal is to give you some food for thought, also to perhaps give you some things that you hadn't thought about before. And then, rather than leave you with doom and gloom, we want to give, perhaps at the end, I'd like to just give two lines of advice at the end of this presentation. So that's our objective. And Bob and I have both worked in industries that were really driven by a lot of trends, mega trends, technology, and so what we're trying to do is capture these, spiritualize them, and say, what does it mean as far as Armageddon? But it's probably important first just to familiarize you what Armageddon really means. So Armageddon comes from the Revelation 16:16 verse. And notice what we've highlighted in blue there. That's really the important part. It's about gathering the forces. The battle itself really doesn't mean a lot. Well, I say it doesn't mean a lot. But it's the culmination. And it's the gathering of forces that we really want to look at. But this term of gathering is important because it's what leads us to look at the trends that we have today in the world and say, how do these trends indicate a gathering together? And to a place called Armageddon, the final battle we all know with Israel, we're not going to really talk about that. We're going to talk about the forces that lead us to that point. One of the pieces of information that we focus on is the Lord's great army. And it's really the Lord's great army that drives everything. The book of Joel is a very important study. We're not going to touch on much of it. We have here Joel 2, 1 to 11. But there's some key parts of Joel 2 that you should look at. It's it is the Lord's great army that brings about the final part of Armageddon. It brings the anarchy. And what is anarchy? Why does the Lord's great army get there?
You know, I think we have some answers to those questions, and we find them in what Pastor Russell said, the question book. And just to summarize the points that are most important when we're considering this is the Lord's great army is not the saints. Pastor makes that very clear. In fact, the forces that he's using are not even necessarily aware of that they're being used. And it's going to involve institutions, as you'll see, we'll get into some of the things that will be involved, but it may involve the mass of humanity as well. And yeah,
it's millions of people, right?
Yeah.
Millions.
Potentially
of people.
Because, you know, to overthrow these systems quickly, which is what has to be done before we can establish the new, the old has to be swept away.
And it's not religious. I don't think it's religious. Because, right, I mean, religious elements may be there, but it's not a religious movement. It's really a movement of people, right?
Right. Yeah. And, so we've got the systems versus the masses of humanity. You know, I've kind of been impressed with how some of the trends we're going to talk about affect people in the world, and especially in third world countries. My first trip to Africa was in 2006, and I was just amazed. Everybody had a cell phone. And by the way, they knew who the American president was, and now they've got smartphones. So whatever we have here in media gets worldwide. And this is,
in fact, technology, which you'll talk about later, I know. One of the things I read is by 2050, there's going to be more cell phones than people have water and electricity. It's just an amazing idea.
Yeah, and we know that things are going to go to anarchy, and I like one of the things that Brother Len said. It's not that when you go to anarchy that everybody's shooting each other and everything's total meltdown and, you know, zombie apocalypse kind of thing.
Which is one of the top 10 fears.
But there is anarchy in different parts of the world right now.
Yeah, it is, and you see it rampant. You're going to see a map that we're going to show you later. It's unprecedented, the kind of changes that we're seeing in some of the elements.
Yeah, and anarchy is really noted by when government no longer serves you any useful purpose, then you don't have government.
Some might say it doesn't serve a useful purpose now, but...
Yeah, well, Somalia is a prime example.
Yeah.
It's ruled by warlords in many of the Middle Eastern countries as well.
And we're seeing this movement across the world of leaders making themselves leaders for life, changing the rules to say, I'm in here. Used to be a dictatorship, went down. Now we're seeing almost an increase back,
but
only
you know,
a different type.
The pastor's last point in the question book was really, God will bring peace and order. And this, you know, our perspective should be these things have to be torn down. It's a demolition process. We actually would prefer it be quick, so it'd be over, and then we can usher in the full establishment of the kingdom.
And the other thing, Bob, what I think at our best, we don't really know how the transition takes place. What does total collapse mean? It can mean a lot of things.
Right.
And so it's not like we have to see everything just absolutely crushed and like you see with the TV movies and things like that. But what we need to see is a place where the world cannot escape from where it's gone.
Right. Perplexity. No way out.
Right.
And, you know, the pastor kind of had the establishment against the discontented masses. We've added another element, and we hope you'll let us do that, because we see technology is now playing a part in our world that didn't exist. Computers didn't exist. Widespread electrification didn't exist. All of these things that they're part of our world, didn't exist in the pastor's day. And those forces are aligning to facilitate this final spasm.
Yeah. There's an important scripture we got in Psalms. And this one we maybe don't tie in as much, I think, to Armageddon, but I think it really is the key. Psalm 76:10 says, surely the wrath of man shall praise you, the remainder of wrath shall you restrain. That's what I see, at least, as the move that goes into Armageddon beyond. It's the wrath of man. Man does it to himself. And I think that was something that was consistent with what I think we read in Volume 4 of Pastor Russell's thought, was that man takes it to the edge and God prevents it from total explosion.
Yeah, I like what the same verse, New Living Translation, says. Human defiance only enhances his glory, for you use it as a weapon. And so God's going to use all of these systems and this collapse and these evil things to his good and edification.
Here's what we've seen, too, from 100 and 120 years ago when it was first being discussed, is that there's a very U.S. concentric view. Of course, didn't have mass media communication. We didn't have all the kind of activity around the world. So a lot of the focus was on what was going on in the U.S. And I mentioned that to a number of brethren, that I think we tend to be more U.S. concentric than we should be, because it's not just the captains of industry or the captains of finance versus the socialists. It's going on around the world. And you're going to see, and I think we hope to show you some of that as we go through here, how much more it's involved around the world.
And really, when we talk about those systems, we're talking about the four winds. And we find that, of course, in Revelation chapter 7. We've got quotes partially from verse 1 and 3. And we see the social, financial, political, and religious systems. And we can see these in our day, just like the pastor did. And we see these things, you know, on the verge of collapse. Sometimes they are collapsing. But there's an important point.
Yeah. So we look at those four elements, and I look at those a lot in just trying to deal with what's going on today in the news. The social changes, we have the financial changes, we have political changes, and we have religious changes. We're not going to talk much about the religious changes because that's a whole thing in itself. But the political, the social, and the financial are really tied together in a much broader way than they were 100 years ago. And that's the amazing part of what leads you to say the gathering together of all these things is astounding because it really takes far less.
Yeah,
it's like the implosion of a building. I worked for a company where we imploded a plant. I watched that plant implode, and it's just like everything collapses onto each other.
Well, what's exciting in a way is because we have a perspective and because we have a map of what's going to happen, and we understand we see through a glass darkly, but we understand some events. We can see some of these forces aligning right now for what will be a downfall. And, you know, we've seen it in different parts of the world at different times. During World War II, all the systems collapsed in Europe. There was no government, right, when the Nazis took over and so forth. So we saw all the systems collapse at once, but it wasn't worldwide. And what we had in the Revelation scripture was the four corners of the earth, the four winds were blowing. So we've seen it in areas, but we've never seen all four corners of the earth as well.
And so one of the things that I mentioned before, people will say, and look at an event and say, well, what does this mean? I don't think events mean a lot in themselves. So in our country, okay, talks go on with our president and the president of Russia. Well, what does this mean and people's reaction to it? Doesn't mean anything itself, but it is indicates some trends. And that's the important thing. We're going to look at, I'm just going to mention 10 trends. These are 10 world trends that I think have transformed the world in the last 120 years, especially the last 50 years. And these are the trends that lead us towards this idea of gathering to a point, to a breaking point. First, geopolitics. We have wars, we have power shifts, we've had sanctions, we've had interventions, not war anymore, it's just an intervention. We have internal conflicts that take place, social unrest all over. We have ethnic violence. We have migration. Today, it's an issue all over. We have nationalism, another big issue. We have civil wars. We have coups going on. We have revolutions going on. Number three, changes in laws, regulations, policies. Never have we seen such a proliferation of law, regulations, policies going, whether it's environment changes, taxation. And again, that's important because it's bringing in a lot of the other elements, like the financial elements. Fourth, breaches of contract, politically motivated kinds of things like credit default, governments reneging on their contracts with others, the honesty going by the wayside, and that trust that was built. Number five, corruption. Well, we've always had corruption, but now the problem is corruption is leading to problems in places where people are trying to get aid, and that corruption is preventing that aid from going in. We have extraterrestrial reach, and I'm not talking about something from outer space, so don't say Len believes in ET or anything. What I mean by this is we have unilateral sanctions going on. We have tariffs going on. Just seeing the battle of tariffs today, part of a trend that I think is going to continue, and investigations into corruption, into governments, into collusions that we see. Number seven, natural resource manipulation. Politically motivated changes to energy sources, minerals. You're going to talk about some of that. Very interesting.
Yeah, I mean,
going on the oil industry.
You know, we were in Africa, and you're amazed at the number of Chinese that are in Africa.
Yeah.
And they are giving aid to African nations. And the ulterior motive is resources.
Yeah.
Because Africa is rich in natural resources. China is not.
Yeah.
And because they're a manufacturer, they need a constant inflow.
Yeah.
So I'm amazed that they're building roads in Africa and doing all sorts of things.
So you make your friends, you know, by investing in their area. And that's what's happened, like with them. powerhouse like China. Social activism. Here's where you have events, opinions, going viral. Would you even know what the term going viral meant? It would have meant that you're sick and in the hospital. Now going viral means it's all over the world instantaneously. And what does that do? I think Bob's going to talk about, you're going to talk about what's happened in communications. But when you think about it, everybody becomes an activist. Right?
Everybody has a voice.
Yeah.
For the first time, anybody that has a smart device has a voice. Yeah. And they can put it on the internet and it can't be covered up. That's never happened before. But it empowers individuals.
Number 9, terrorism. Well, terrorism we've been living with big time since 2001. And it just goes on. Terrorism keeps changing its forms. Rather, it's coming from Wahhabism, which is the Muslim terrorism, like 9/11. Now we have violence, gun violence all over. We just keep terrorism. These are all politically motivated threats and violence against people, against their property. The very kinds of things that we talked about leading to Armageddon, where people would not be respecters of other people. When we think about neighbor against neighbor, it just means that respect that people had for property, for things, all those things that were part of the law in Israel, those are not being respected anymore.
You know, one of the things that I deal with in my workplace, too, is being in IT, is cyber threats. And I will tell you that businesses are spending billions of dollars and countless man hours in trying to prevent cyber threats, cyber terrorism. One of the ransomware threats that recently occurred didn't ask for a ransom. It was to damage businesses. So this is what's happening within large corporations right now, spending tremendous amounts of money to counteract this.
And a lot of this we don't even know. I mean, this, if you're being terrorized and you're being a part of cyber terrorism, you're not letting people know because you're letting them know you're vulnerable. So it's
broader. There's two aspects of that, too. If it's an infiltration into your system, the average time before you detect them is about 6 months.
Yeah.
So they can be in there and then no telling what they're doing.
So you've got espionage, you've got extortion, we've got massive disruption going on everywhere in industries and governments and societies. That, to me, is anarchy, really. It's leading to the point where, how do we control this thing? Nobody's got a real answer on prevention of some of this stuff.
Yeah, the genie's out of the bottle. Yeah. So the three major areas, the three major trends we're going to kind of focus in on, and there are many more, dramatic changes in post-Cold War politics. The world has really changed. Government control over economic systems and the struggle between that and non-governmental economics. And finally, the technology revolution and how that may play in. So we're going to try to give you a perspective, thinking of what we know about the steps leading to Armageddon, the suddenness, the catastrophic nature, and being worldwide. We'll try to give you some insights into some things we see. And once again, we're doing this as students of the Bible, not as prophets.
Yeah, that's important. We're not prophesying. We're not prophets, but we are students. This is that famous map I told you to wait for. Anyways, here's where we've seen since the Cold War, end of the Cold War, which we put around 89, 90, when the Soviet Union collapsed and many people were freed up. How many of you in this audience came out of former Soviet Union countries? I see a few hands.
Yeah.
But think about many of our brethren we know. And I really think that collapse was there for a purpose to allow for the Lord to allow his people to come out and to be able to be introduced to the rest of us and to actually free up what might have been a real stifling environment for a while. And now we're starting to see some dramatic political changes kind of going back the other way since the end of the Cold War. One thing is there's really no clear dividing line that I see. No clear dividing line between who are your adversaries, who are your allies. Think about that.
our current political environment really doesn't facilitate. Yeah. We seem to be attacking our allies and supporting
that's
our
right. Because here, enemies. You know, we had all the to-do about North Korea, about Russia here. And then you've got in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia and Israel. You know, are those real allies? I don't think so. There's a purpose in them because they got a common enemy.
The thing to remember as we look at governments and we go, this is just totally crazy, is realize that God is setting these individuals up. They're part of his army. Yep. And that there is a purpose, just like there is for climate change. There's a purpose in this, and it's going to work to God's glory. And if we can keep that perspective, it takes a lot of the anxiety away.
Yeah, these things, I find them exciting in the sense that it really gives us some strength to our faith. That's really what this should do. It should help us verify God's purpose is to build the kingdom on this earth. He's going to do that as soon as he's finished calling and sealing the church class. And that's the overriding factor in all this. This is not just to disrupt things. I remember hearing some that were kind of former Jehovah's Witnesses were saying, oh, blood's going to run in the streets. That's not the kind of image we want to have, because God is going to stop it before, I think, it destroys man totally. And that's the whole point.
I think the other thing to realize is that God's plan is exactly on time.
Right.
Exactly on time. I mean, when we think events should occur, or it's not necessarily when God's going to do it, but he's in charge. What he says, he will do.
So when we think about what these dramatic political changes, we have declining states, failed states, rogue states, non-state actors like the terrorist groups, and cyber criminals.
Yeah, we can't even put dots on the map because they're here, they're transitory or they're virtual.
Now, the brethren have always thought about, Europe, and that Europe would play a big role as part of the process of the end. And we're seeing some real big changes going on in Europe now. You know, when we had the European Union, it's really on the precipice of having a lot of issues. We know England has pulled out of the European Union. We see other threats. But today, the immigration issue around the world has caused big changes in Europe because of the push from North Africa, especially in all the Muslim regions of the year. Let me give you just a few examples of these. How Europe is realizing changes their country. And I think this influence is important because it's an anti-Israel influence. It's an influence that could bring domestic change and political change to those countries.
You know, the bottom line is 80% of the world, because they have these smart devices, they know what's happening in Europe and America. They see our lifestyle, and it's good. And they would love to have it. So 80% of the world would like to migrate to either Europe or North America. And that's an issue, because although we can be generous and altruistic and all of those kinds of things, we can't handle 80% of the population. And that especially is what Europe is seeing with this influx from Africa and the Middle East.
We can go to Austria, where the Chancellor of Austria, Kurz, has expelled 60 Turkish-funded imams and families, cracking down on political Islam. So we have a war going on there. And it was recently warned of a war between the cross and the crescent. So moving into the Christian versus Islam realm. Czech Republic. They have said it's practically impossible to integrate those Islam coming in into modern Europe.
Well, and one of the problems, of course, is they don't want to integrate.
Right. Don't want to integrate.
Traditionally, in the United States, when immigrants came in the past, they would integrate into the society. They would meld in, and now we've got a segment that wants to have, like they have in France, some little enclaves where they have Sharia law.
And Germany has had a tremendous problem. We know they had the open policy and they brought people in, but it's an overwhelming majority of them are unable to find jobs, and it's a huge tax on the social systems. And these social systems are already hard-pressed because of the aging populations. Hungary doesn't have a problem because they've got no welfare programs. But we're seeing that draining of the financial systems of these countries because of the influx that we have.
We heard a recent report on NPR about in Japan, older widows are committing crimes so they can be thrown in jail because there is no social safety net. And yet if they're incarcerated, they get a place to sleep, so they get housing and food. And so that's what happens in these places where they don't have that. And China is another country that is in the process of facing that because of their one-child policy. They don't have enough workers to support those that are becoming into retirement age and beyond.
I just mentioned two more. Canada. The Sheikh Shafiq Huda has accused organizations of discrimination against him. Why? Because they said that he wished for the eradication of 8.2 million Israelis. He said, no, I didn't say that at all. That's not what I said. You got me wrong. I was praying only for the eradication of 6 million Israeli Zionists. But that's the problem you have, a big anti-Israel movement in these. And let's just mention Saudi Arabia, because, and then we'll move on to another part. Because Saudi Arabia, as we know, Brother Tim Thomason mentioned the Time magazine. Some of you get Time magazine. The headline or the cover said, Keys to the Kingdom. Well, they were talking about women being able to drive there in Saudi Arabia. But there's an inflammatory content that still stays in Saudi Arabia that is against Christians, Jews, Muslims. It's a sleeping giant if you don't believe in fundamental Islam. And there was an Islamic academy in Fairfax, Virginia that was closed. And it was closed because they said adulterers, converts from Islam should be killed, and that the Jews conspired against Islam and its people in all cases. So these dramatic political changes are driving a lot of social things.
Yeah, we're going to go ahead and talk a little bit about economic systems and how they're tied to governments, which is quite intriguing.
Yeah, just touch on a few here. There's one very interesting thing with the government today. And I'll use the U.S. only as an example, but it's true across the globe. Various governments, state, local, and federal, employ about 15.6 million civilians. Okay? The Fortune 500 companies in aggregate employ 15.8 million. The government industrial complex is as big as the corporate complex. Remember Brother Russell's day, he talked about the finance giants and those versus others. But government is now part of that whole scenario and has really surpassed it. And think about it. Government has created a new interest in this sizable class of people that have a stake in what happens with them. 4 million additional workers are consultants. So you've got almost 20 million people. Well, what has happened as a result of that? We've seen legislation regarding social mores because of that pressure from the people that are part of it. Extends government institutions like women, homosexuality, marriage, family, abortion, real estate, education. How much is government going to spend and for whom?
Yeah, and that's it's a real issue. And also government's involved in the economic system. I mean, government funds money, and we're going to talk just briefly about how cyber currencies are coming in and competing with them, and that's a problem.
Well, Bob, I'm anxious to hear about technology, what you think technology is doing to change, move us towards kind of a
Well, there's some trends here that lead us towards a precipice. It's as though we were on the top of El Capitan, and we're looking over the edge, and we're leaning. And there's some loose rocks. And so if something comes loose, you can go right over the edge. So there's things that we see. The number one is something you might not think about is precision. And prior to the Industrial Revolution, they didn't really have engineering as a trade. But now precision in industry is down to about 1/10 of a million of an inch. That's pretty common in manufacturing. Urbanization is another thing that we've seen. Prior to the Industrial Revolution, cities really couldn't grow over about 500,000 people because they needed infrastructure in their immediate area to feed them, so they couldn't grow larger. And then post-industrial revolution, things changed because now you had transit systems and so forth to where we're in mega cities now. We're seeing transportation as a revolution. You know, a number of us have Amazon and you order it and it's there the next day, you know, we have UPS. Everything comes right to our door. And businesses are no different, by the way. Electrification. Since the electrification of the world, we've gone from an animal and slave economy to our machines do our work for us. And so that's been a tremendous transition. Electronics.
Bob, when that happens, what happens to all the people that are employed in those industries?
Well, you know, there is definitely a shift, and there are winners and losers, but there are more net users because you save money. And we're a money-based economy. Electronics. So electronics is really interesting. I mean, we all have these little devices of some type in our pocket that have... You know, this one has 64 billion transistors in it. And there was an interesting fact that in 2017 there were 15 quintillion microprocessors in the world. And to put that in perspective, that's 19 zeros after the 15. But to put it in perspective, that's more than all the leaves on all the trees on Earth. That's how pervasive it is. Computerization, of course, we all know, we're using that and exploiting that technology, but we are also very dependent on it. And businesses like the hospital system that I work for close their doors if all the computers are down and electricity is gone. Along with that, the networks that support communication and integration worldwide, we're having increasing complexity on all levels, and we're letting our machines manage it for us. But like you, if this is offline and I have to call somebody, I don't know what their phone number is, right? We depend on our technology. Logistics is another important trend. So we see that logistics, that's where they make sure that you have everything when you need it, where you need it, right? No matter where you are in the world.
And Bob, small players can be a big part of this now, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so it makes it much more vulnerable to disruptions when you've got a lot of small people.
I'm a continuity planner for this hospital system, and part of what we do is we look at supply chain is what we call it, and that can be big or small, to make sure that we can get things like IV bags that were disrupted when the hurricane hit Puerto Rico, that kind of thing. Electronic accounting, and we are all one disastrous event from having no accounting of any money that we have, right? Because we don't really have paper money in a vault in our home or even in the bank. It's all electronic. Virtualized money to allow us to transfer anywhere in the world. That's becoming a problem for government because government's always been in on money and usury is involved in these virtual currencies. You can transfer.
Yes. Yeah, cyber currency. Places like the SEC and others don't know what to do because regulating these things is just...
It's scary.
How do you regulate it?
Yeah.
Right.
Homogeneity, that means not having heterogeneous is where you got a lot of different things. And early on in college, I was a biology major, and one of the things that impressed me is heterogeneous ecosystems are healthy because if any one player or things change, it affects part, and then the other ones fill in. Homogeneous is very bad because if one species is affected, then you can have a major ecological impact. How many internets are there in the world? One.
One, right?
How many operating systems? Not a whole lot. Probably 10 commonly and probably 5 that are mostly used in the whole world. That represents weakness in the systems. How many banking systems? Well, we go to global. You see how we've standardized, but we don't have, like God has diversity, millions of species. We have very few. And so that's a problem. And then the last problem we mentioned is really big, whether it be mega cities or too big to fail or big government.
Well, and one of the big problems is we are almost totally dependent now on computerization, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and most of the major first world countries.
Yeah, we look at the trends. So the trends that really changed our world started with the internet. So all of a sudden we figured out computers could communicate. About 1990 that came in. So that's 28 years ago. And then 11 years ago, the smartphone. That seems dramatic, right? Because they're pervasive in the world. And then after the smartphone, what we call apps came along. And these are things that changed the social makeup. So we found out that, you know, the Arab Spring could not have occurred without Twitter. That's how they mobilized lots of people.
I guess that's the chairman saying you're done.
Yeah, I guess it is. No. You better get going. Another thing that's happening is we're entering the cognitive era that occurred in 2016 in the fall. IBM announced it. And this is where we have learning machines. And a learning machine is defined as one that you give it data, you don't have to pre-program it, and it learns and understands. So it understands natural language input, and it can also give natural language output. And the implications are tremendous, because learning machines will replace people, and already are, by the way. You might have noticed H&R Block now uses Watson. That's IBM's learning machine, and there are others. There's going to be a big decline in intellectual and professional jobs. We are already seeing it. I get Health Data Management magazine, and I've seen several articles on how radiologists, that Watson is better at reading mammography than radiologists by a factor of five. Five times more accurate. Who do you want to read your mammogram? You know, machines are going to be replacing not ditch diggers, but professionals. And they are going to become indispensable to business. And so the social impacts of this will be tremendous. Yeah. You know, we're going to look just briefly at electric car adoption. And the forces behind this is China, because China has mandates. And, you know, China's not like the United States where we say we'd like to have this many. In 2019, 8% of all cars sold must be electric. And in 2021, it transitions each year, continues to step up. 12% must be. This is in China. We might not be aware of that. The Paris Climate Accord, that is driving Europe to electrification, to solar and electric cars big time. And the third one was Dieselgate. And this was a thing where Volkswagen defrauded Europe and the United States, saying they had clean diesel and it was horribly dirty, but they tricked all the testers. And that caused consumers not to trust the car companies. So people are taking this into their own hands. And the current thing says that one out of three people want to buy an electric car as their next car. And you see, the car makers along the bottom are very serious about this now. China's the largest car market in the world, and they want a piece of that action.
So, Bob, tell me about oil.
Yeah, so the real implications, so why do we care about electric cars? Well, it's going to be tremendously disruptive, but look at the trends in oil. Bloomberg, 2 years in a row, put out this chart, and it remained virtually unchanged, saying that because of 3 to 4% adoption of electric vehicles, that oil, gasoline, and diesel demand would go down permanently in a long-term decline. Now, that's what happened to coal.
Right, we know.
But what's the implication of the petrol economy going down the tubes?
The implication is big changes in the Middle East, more than what we've even seen, because we know everybody but Israel has that dependency on Middle East oil.
So you see some of the players here who have a big stake in oil, Russia, Saudi Arabia, Venezuela, Mexico, and there are many others, Nigeria and so forth. So if they are all competing for diminishing dollars, once you get below $70 a barrel, it becomes difficult to sell for less than your cost. What happens when we go into a long-term systemic decline?
So I think that Psalm 83 that we talk about, which is the ongoing battle between the Arabs and Israel, that's when we start to see that accelerate even more, because Israel has the technology, not dependent on oil. And when you've got those declining dollars, somebody like Saudi Arabia, they're no longer a friend of Israel.
Right.
Because they need that technology.
So these are things to be aware of, and what's the implications?
Oops. Let's go back here. So as we wrap this up, it's been a kind of a whirlwind, and you know, we've got so much things we could talk about on this, and you know, maybe this is part one of something that we'll have in the future. But it's important for us all to think about this, and especially if you're on the young side, you've got young families, and you say, boy, you guys are just really tearing us apart. But remember, this commitment is about what's going to bring blessings to the world. We look at Joel 21. Bob, maybe you can highlight that because I can't read that without my glasses. But.
Yeah, and the concentration and the focus here is the fig tree and the vine do yield their strength. So there, you're going to see a relationship. Israel's going to emerge from this. It really gives us an assurance of exactly what we've heard, that God's kingdom will well up and that the nations will flow to Israel. And they'll be a blesser.
Yeah, and notice it's a fig tree is mentioned, which we know usually represents Israel. And then also the vine. What does vine represent? That's the church. So it's about the rescue, these two playing an important role, and then bringing about permanent change. So what do we do?
Yeah, what do we do? Well, we hope that information and knowledge, because God gives us some information, some knowledge, and we're seeing trends. We hope that that empowers us versus frightening us, because we see these things happening. So when we see scary things on the news, we realize this is part of God's plan. It should bring us strength and comfort.
And remember, I've said this before, but as much as you can, ignore what's going on in the news. You turn this on, they have no understanding like we do of what's happening in the world. You tear yourself apart when you start believing that some of the things that the headlines are telling you. So really go easy on that. Look at the trends, the longer trends. It's a much more peaceful way to look at things.
And so what we read in Jeremiah 29:11, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and to not harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future."
So here's my last two lines of advice I said that we were going to give. And I can't take credit for this. Brother Ray Luke first talked about this. I think he was a very wise man, sociologist, but Ray had great advice, and I think this advice is good. Live your spiritual life as if you will be gone tomorrow. Live your financial life, your family life, as if you'll be here for the next 50 years. We don't know when the final blow comes. We can see it, just as Brother Russell saw it for 1914. But brethren, as we said at the beginning, we're not prophets. We can just look at the prophecy. So keep that advice in mind.